Come fly with me. Let's fly away.
Welcome to Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
You know, there are moments in your life that you know that you need a break. And sometimes that includes actually packing a bag and going somewhere. And when you get someplace wonderful and fun and alluring, you want to make sure that you have the kinds of experiences that you want to come home and talk about and remember forever and ever. I have a shelf. It's an imaginary shelf. It's loaded with apothecary jars. Also imaginary, because you wouldn't want to put an apothecary jar that's made of glass on an imaginary shelf and have it go splat on the floor. But all of these apothecary jars are filled with rose petals. And every one of them is a memory of something outstanding, someplace I have been, somewhere on this beautiful planet. And on a really bad day, I visit my imaginary shelf and I open the lids and I take a deep whiff of the aroma of the dried rose petals in these imaginary jars. And I have to tell you, it's gotten me through things like MRIs. So there are moments you just want to escape to something really happy. And a great memory is something you can't lose, like a bracelet you used to like. It's something you will have with you forever. And there are life-altering moments that take place in truly unique places. And theaters are places that will have that impact on you. In fact, I count my visits to London, figuring out what year that was, by what play I saw on the stage in London Theater. And so it being able to go to a unique, extraordinary theater can be such a positive, motivational tool in your own life and move you forward because of something you heard, something you saw, a thought you had you would never have had it not been for the inspirational moment that you were in a theater. I'm lucky enough to be in Albany, New York today. And one of the places you must visit in Albany, New York, a hop and a jump, by the way, from New York City. And if you don't live in the region, rent a car and drive through the beautiful Hudson Valley, or hop on Amtrak and let the driving be done by then while you appreciate and enjoy the fantastic views of the region and the Hudson River as you come into Albany Rensselaer train station, where, by the way, they have a location of Enterprise car rental, so you can arrange to have a car there or have a limo or a taxi or whatever your favorite mode of transportation is. You can make it work from the Albany Rensselaer train station, and you're going to want to find your way into all the historic and wonderful museums and great places to eat and outdoor adventures. And there is something for whatever your interest is, but I'm hoping you're going to put a visit to an incredible theater on your list. And we're going to visit with the executive director of the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, right after this.
Stephanie Abrams Travel Show is brought to you by Amtrak. It's time to see New York and save 15% with Amtrak. Plan your 15% saving getaway today at Amtrak.com and click on deals and look for See New York and Save 15%.
I am in the office of Susan Roscoe Fogarty, executive director of the Palace Theater that bills itself as having over 80 years of amazing entertainment. And just walking into, first of all, the theater is reminiscent of people. Did you see the film The Majestic with Jim Carrey? That's a fictitious theater, by the way. They built a theater front. But there's similarities because they built this kind of Gilded Age, Art Deco looking kind of a facade. And for the movie, the rest was done on a soundstage. But you can do the real deal where you can walk through that magnificent, impressive entry area into a real live historic theater. And have the opportunity to see some incredible performances. So I was blown away, Susan, just reading all the posters of what's coming up. And then you've got this digital thing going on outside that looks reminiscent of Times Square and 42nd Street with the digital news of, you know, what's on the horizon. And I'm saying, oh, I want to see that. And oh, I want to see that. So you may see my face back here sooner rather than later. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you, Stephanie. I'm so glad you're here.
Well, let's talk about the theater. You're kind of a newcomer to the theater, no?
I am. I became executive director just over a year ago. It was my great joy to be
able
to...
Where were you before?
I was in finance for 10 years prior to coming in as executive director.
That's a good skill to have for a theater.
It's an excellent skill to have, and I absolutely use it every day. Prior to that, I was 17 years in the music industry, so I was on the record label side of the business.
Were you living out west?
I started my music career in Atlanta. I grew up in this area, which has been very important to the role I have here at the Palace, to have had roots in the Capital Region. But I moved to Atlanta after college, and I was down there for 10 years, and then I was in New York City for 6. And I had the great pleasure of working for Clive Davis. I worked for Richard Branson. I helped do the first 6 or 7 seasons of American Idol, and did lots of, you know, great things across many different record companies. Really, really great experience learning how to work with artists and managers and really manage the bottom line.
I had the pleasure of sitting in the first class lounge of Air Portugal, known as TAP, Transportos Aero Portug something. Whatever. It means Air Portugal. And we were in the first class lounge in Lisbon and then flew together to London, where he got off and I got on a Virgin Atlantic flight and flew to Newark, New Jersey. And so we chatted for about 5 hours, I want to say. Yeah. His assistant in London was Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember her?
Yeah, she was based over there, and then he had a team, of course, in the United States, and you know, so many
Virgin
people.
Virgin Music, yeah.
Right? And so many people know of Richard as kind of this larger than life, right?
He's a wild man.
What's interesting is, you know, when you work for him, he runs a very flat organization. So, which
what
is
does that mean?
Meaning there's not a lot of hierarchy.
Oh, right.
And so you actually have quite a bit of access to him. So when he was in the United States, and you know, music was such a passion for him. If you remember some of the history, he sold Virgin Records. When he was trying to save Virgin Airlines. Virgin Airlines was in a big war with British Airways. Obviously, British Airways was backed by the government, and so he really needed some capital. He sold Virgin Records and had a 5-year non-compete, and 5 years to the day, he started up Virgin 2 and hired a group of us to launch that label.
Oh, wow.
It was very, very exciting.
Yeah. That's an airline ploy, by the way. Any newcomer, the folks that own the market, will keep dropping their fares until they're paying the passengers to get on board in order to drive out competition. It's an ugly story,
yeah.
A really ugly story. But he is such a creative, innovative person, and I am sure that any association you had with him directly or through the company, which just, you know, it doesn't just trickle through, it percolates through the organization. And interestingly enough, on that 5-hour flight, I was telling him he needs to come in and start an airline in the U.S., and I promise him the industry will get behind it and my company will get behind it. And it took about 4 years that he came out with Virgin America.
Good call, Stephanie.
Which is now owned by Alaska Airlines.
Yep.
But he brings innovative craziness to everything he does, and I'm going to send you the outtakes from the commercial he made for American Express card.
Great.
You know that I'm a member since?
Yep.
Okay, I've got the outtakes.
Oh,
they're
kidding.
Hilarious.
Oh, that's
yes,
fun.
Yes, the person who gave it to me said, never tell that you got it from me. But in any event, that kind of experience and background has got to have impact here on the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, because you come in with a global vision that's different from even with the most creative and brilliant people that you'll find in the state of New York. There's something that you learn in working in organizations that throw away the book and do things differently. And so we're going to we got a little bit more time before we take a break, because I'd really like to get into what is it other than your focus on the bottom line from your financial background that has positive impact for the visitor to Albany who comes to the Palace Theater?
Well, I think it's funny when you talk about Richard, you know, one of the biggest lessons I learned from him, and he's often quoted saying that your customer is not your most important, it's actually your employees. And when I came in as executive director, I said to the team, I have three priorities every day in this order. It is the staff of this organization and growing your career and growing your engagement in this organization. The second was to continue programming this beautiful theater and continue to bring world-class entertainment to the region. And the third was to embark on this restoration and renovation project.
So we're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back and continue this wonderful conversation with Susan Roscoe Fogarty, the executive director of the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, a place you've got to put on your must-visit list. Don't leave me.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
You know, I interview CEOs of major brands and big companies in travel and tourism. And when you get in the hotel industry, it's the general manager where the buck stops. And lots of GMs and when ministers of tourism for destinations and even a president of a country or two. But what the remark you made about your first priority is your staff, the thing I hear from every successful organization when I ask what makes what you deliver to the traveling public special, the answer is always my team, my staff, my people. And I always come back with the, you know, all armies have guns and bullets, but the difference between one army and another will be its soldiers. So, you know, knowing where to aim and where to fire and being ready to do that requires you to have people that your passion for where you need to take an organization to meet and hopefully exceed your goals. You can't do it alone. You can't be a star by yourself. You can only see the stars in the sky. You can't find an individual star. The way you find an individual star is you find the constellation, and then you look for the star in the constellation. So everybody's got to be close up and snuggy, going in the same direction, creating the light that's going to have the impact. Otherwise, you're out there like, you know, in the dark.
Yeah. Right? And that's the goal, right? And I've had the privilege of working for some terrific CEOs, Richard Branson, Clive Davis, Pete Jones from BMG, and then Beth Mooney, the chairwoman of KeyBank. You know, is a tremendous CEO and another very people-first kind of leader. But the real gift has been coming here and having a team that is so profoundly dedicated to this theater and the customer experience.
Have many of them been here for a long time?
You know, it varies. We've had some like Sean Allen, our director of marketing, who's been here for 13, 14, 15. He's
more
with me now. 16, 15, 15 years.
Sold.
You know, members of our operations team who have been here for many years, but there are also a lot of fresh faces. So the common theme seems to be really the joy of working in the creative arts. People are here because they really want to be. You know, we're a nonprofit, so we are not, you know, nobody is hugely compensated. No, we don't have the best benefits in the world. We are trying to create a place, you know, that is very people first and that, you know, I look at it as people come here because they have a passion for the theater, for music, for the customer experience. And I have to say, you know, I came in with a financial background thinking, well, you know, I'm sure I'm going to have to really, you know, kind of push this agenda forward. And it's pushed for me. Everyone here is incredibly fiscally responsible. Everyone here is very conscious of what it takes to run a theater. Everyone's looking for ways to make sure customers and patrons have such a great time here that they're always going to want to come back. Every single person, usher, concession, security, front of house, goes the extra mile to make sure people have a great experience.
You are so blessed.
I am so blessed. I did not have to teach that. I just have to support it, you know? And so one of the things I hope I've been able to bring is to make sure everybody understands that it isn't just a job here. It's also, they can have a career here. This business is highly transactional. There's a lot of, you know, motion between organizations and people leaving and coming and going to different roles or different theaters. So I've really tried to create a place where people feel like they can have a career here. And we have those conversations. It's not just come work the show, go home. You know, we talk about, what do you want to do here? What more support do you need? What can we do to help you build out your department or make your job easier? And really try and make sure everyone's voice is heard.
Let's talk a little bit about the theater itself. It was built when?
1931.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, now if you take a quiet step, that's probably, the building began about a year and a half after the stock market crash.
Yep.
It would take not only somebody with money, but somebody with confidence, somebody with interest in seeing a community grow and thrive and provide construction work and other work once the construction was finished in this region, and to build something worthwhile and enduring that it's not going to be too long before you're coming up on your 100th anniversary.
I know.
And what impact, positive impact, on the not only the economy, but this is a shining star in the midst of downtown Albany, New York, that it's iconic and everybody can be so proud of. So, you know, when you look at 1931, dear Lord, I mean, you're talking about, you know, bread lines and people selling matches and apples and, you know, I don't know. There's stories about whether it was true that people really jumped off buildings, you know, because now that's all being revisited, revisionary and whatever. But I guess the people who got through best were the people who never had anything to begin with, because nothing changed.
Right.
But for people who had done so well in the Industrial Revolution and they were, you know, living such pampered, privileged lives, that was done. So to have the vision, the confidence, and, you know, a little bit of craziness to say, we're going to do it and we're going to make it work. And they did.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
And John Eberson, who is one of the most renowned theater architects there is, was the architect for this project.
Are there other theaters? I'm not familiar with his name. So.
There are other Eberson theaters, yes. And they're beautiful.
Any we would know, or that you'd come off the top of your head?
I'd have to look, to be honest.
I'm can't look
some
it
of
up.
The some of the other RKOs, some of the other palaces. He
oh,
was
okay.
Sort of the designer of that palace, you know, type of movie house.
And for and, you people who have, you know, grown up in the New York area, the RKO theaters that came out of that era, that where they were the iconic, the velvety blue, dark blue ceiling with the little twinkle lights that look like stars, and, you know, very much reminiscent of the feeling that you get when you walk into Radio City Music Hall in just a neighborhood theater.
Yeah. And, you know, it started as an RKO movie house and then, you know, survived for many years. Then, of course, did vaudeville and had to do other kinds of entertainment as the movie business started to go down. And it actually, the palace closed in 1969. And the city picked it up from Fabian Enterprises for $90,000, and it was
wow.
bought by the city of Albany. And then soon after,
another smart move.
Yeah, soon after it reopened, and in 1979 we were on the historic registry. Went through many years of, you know, kind of limping along as a roadhouse, but still booking acts. And you know, if you look at the history of acts that have played here, Bruce Springsteen, Guns N' Roses, you know, all of the biggest names of the 70s, 80s, 90s. And what a great thrill it was for me when I started last November that within 2 weeks we had Bob Dylan, who was who was playing here. So
we're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back talking about the Palace Theater in Albany. Their website is palacealbany.com. If you're driving, don't worry about it. Go to sabrams.com, where you always go for information, and you'll find the show. You can download it for a year. You can hear it forever at sabrams.com, and you can click right through the links that we've created. We'll be right back. Don't leave me. Stephanie Abrams here in Albany.
Portions of today's show brought to you by Incredible Malta, where seascapes, landscapes, great food, beach and city resorts, and wonderful inhabitants make Malta a must-visit experience. For details, go to visitmalta.com.
It's summertime, summertime, summertime.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
I am delighted to be in the office of Susan Roscoe Fogarty at the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, a place that you have to come and visit as an experience. You know, we are movie buffs, and we are also people who enjoy the theater, and so I'm always interested in theatrical venues, no matter where we are. And I noticed coming in that there were posters promoting upcoming things in spring and going into summer already that are out there. I want to, you know, get into that, but I'm wondering if you could email me a list of not only the more recent people who have performed, like the Bruce Springsteens and the Bob Dylans of the world, in recent history, but going back to the 1930s, sure, who were some of the people that had performed here? Because I have to imagine that Albany was on the touring circuit from New York to Chicago.
Yeah.
And anything that was happening in New York would have passed through. So it wouldn't surprise me if Sarah Bernhardt played in this theater.
Yep.
So I'd be really interested in seeing a list of, you know, who are the famous of the past, whose ghosts haunt the halls of the building. What's coming up for our listeners who want to start planning to expand their business trip to New York City, and those who want to get in the Hupmobile and take a ride or fly into Albany International Airport, pick up a car, or take Amtrak up from New York and go through the beautiful Hudson Valley to arrive at the Albany Rensselaer Amtrak station? What's coming? What would motivate some of our listeners to say, oh, we got to go to that?
Oh, well, I think, you know, in general, first of all, we really love to encourage, you know, myself having lived in New York for many years, it's always interesting to me to be able to see shows here that you would never be able to get into in New York because they're going to be crowded. The tickets are going to be more expensive.
So are you getting Hamilton?
What, yeah. Our dear friends at Proctor's are actually doing Hamilton. So we don't do a lot of theatrical, and partially that's because we have a terrific Broadway house over in Schenectady, our friends over at Proctor's. Our programming is primarily rock, family, comedy, R&B, classical. We're very lucky to be one of the homes of the Albany Symphony Orchestra. We host their administrative offices here, and they perform here throughout the year. And then we have world-class comedians. Jerry Seinfeld is here every other year, like clockwork. We just had Amy Schumer. We've got a couple nights with Jim Gaffigan coming up in March, which will be a great show for us. We have acts like Hozier coming and Trey Anastasio from Fish, which is a huge show for us, which we're really excited about. We do really well and have a lot of fun with a lot of the jam bands. People come and really enjoy the vibe here, and they like to see this, you know, beautiful historic theater really come alive when these bands are here.
So if we go to palacealbany.com, you'll have all the details and the opportunity to buy tickets online, or
it's actually
the
yep.
telephone number where you can call to get your tickets.
All of that's actually palacealbany.org now. And you can go online. You'll see a list of all of our events and the links to get tickets through Ticketmaster. And you can also always call our box office. So, and we're really proud to have diverse programming. We've really tried to pay attention to the community that we're in. And one of the things we've really worked hard in the last year is to not only focus on all of the shows that we're doing that are the big name acts, but to also work with our community. And we had our first annual community block party last year. And every summer for the last 5 years, we've done the Summer in the City movie series. That is a really, really impactful program. That's 8 weeks of summer movies every Tuesday. It's free and open to the public. Kids are free. They get popcorn. They get out of the heat. They're in the air conditioning. And we have sponsors that help give good nutritional information, health information. Fantastic, fantastic program. Last year, we had the highest number of people we've ever had come through that series.
What kind of films do you show?
We do, like, you know, we do everything from Moana to, they're all children and family, you know, programming. And then throughout the year, we do family fun days. And, you know, we always make sure that we have something that is affordable, that's fun, that's safe. We're very proud members of the Arbor Hill Neighborhood Association. The Arbor Hill Neighborhood is you know, what we are part of. And for those who don't know, you know, that is a community that has gone through a lot. And we are really trying to be part of the solutions and helping that community thrive.
So the theater itself is one of those historic, iconic, amazing. They were built to be architecturally temples to showcase the burgeoning film industry. And going to a movie theater in the 1930s and onward was an elevating experience that people would get dressed up for.
Right.
So when you come to any of the wonderful things that you have rattled off, it's not just about the performances, the performers, what's going on the stage. Not that that's not, clearly that's not an unimportant part, but that's the enhancement to, for me, the big feature, which is the theater itself.
Yeah. This beautiful building, and it is really...
Describe it.
Well, so, you know, you walk into this very grand lobby. We have Baroque-style murals done by Hungarian artists. We have a beautiful Czechoslovakian chandelier that's hanging in the main
foyer. Yeah, Czech crystal is fairly amazing.
Yeah, and back in the days of Governor Corning, much of that was painted over. It was painted over in this brown that was then remodeled and uncovered.
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
There wasn't a skylight behind it or anything, was there?
No.
Because
we
a
all
lot
shake
of buildings,
our heads.
No, a lot of buildings that have glass dome ceilings,
right,
they were painted in either brown or forest green during World War II because of concerns that maybe the Nazis could make their way across the ocean and they'd see the light coming through these glass ceilings and bomb the place.
No.
So places like Amtrak's Penn Station in Baltimore has this gorgeous, it's not stained glass, but it's, I don't think it's stained glass. It's just leaded glass. But they painted the outside, and it's not more than maybe 15, 20 years ago, somebody went up there with, you know, turpentine and got rid of all the paint on it so you could see through it. But I don't get it.
We don't either. And thankfully, in 2002 to 2003, they went through a renovation. They were able to restore all of the original beauty. And there's these stories of these grown men up on ladders removing the brown paint and uncovering the murals behind it and just
that
in tears.
That is a skill and a talent, by the way, because
absolutely,
while you're removing the brown paint, you could also be removing what's underneath it.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that really is to have skilled people capable of doing that kind of restoration work is incredible.
And again, you know, we've had a very committed board of directors, many of whom were there at that time, and they really made sure that we had the right people and the right experts to come in and do that renovation. And when you walk in, I mean, I think our favorite part as a staff is when we see the kids come in. Because most of the adults are still looking down at their phone, they're getting in line for beer. You know, if we're lucky, they take a minute and they take it all in. And I always say, if you come to a show at the Palace, show up at least a couple minutes early. Stand in the lobby. Just take it in. Look at these beautiful murals, the high ceilings, the balcony. Look at the stage before it's full. You know, it's this incredible moment. And then, as you said, it's only enhanced by that live performance, you know.
I mean, what a venue for the performer.
Oh.
I mean, for a performer who's never been here, they must come in and get psyched by it.
We get tremendous feedback from artist and crew. The crew loves it because our team is amazing and they have such a great experience setting up for a show here. The artists love it because it really truly is a genuine historic theater. You can feel it on the floorboards as you walk across. You can feel it when you stand on the stage and you look out into that audience and you can see every person in the balcony in the loge and you can see every person in the orchestra. It is really something extraordinarily special.
Wow. Yeah, I have to agree. But what's more interesting is you don't have to cross an ocean to find some palatial kind of opera house looking kind of a place. It's right here.
Yeah.
More easily accessible than most places.
Oh, yeah. And I've traveled all over Europe, and it is not hyperbole to say I've had the same experience standing in the lobby of the palace that I've had standing in some of the churches in Italy or Ireland or, you know, in Australia, you know, to be in this theater and to just see its just, you know, ornate beauty is really something.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break and come right back up and finish up this hour with Susan Roscoe Fogarty, who is so well informed. I guess that comes with the territory of being executive director of the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. Check out palacealbany.org. We'll be right back. Don't leave me.
This old house once knew my children.
It's Travel with Stephanie Abrams.
We're talking with Susan Roscoe Fogarty, who is the executive director of the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. And, you know, there are theaters around America and elsewhere that they're truly remarkable when you walk into them. The Fox Theater in St. Louis. I can't remember. There are two theaters in San Francisco. One is an AMC movie theater now on Van Ness. So any of you listening on the West Coast and, you know, you're not going to get to the East Coast that quick, you could try stopping by there to get some feeling or sense of what this theater, the Palace Theater in Albany, New York, is like. But there's one, the AMC theater, where you walk in, just as you described it, 2-3 stories high and all this marvelous carving and interesting floors and... and there's another one, I don't remember, I think it's called the Apollo, maybe, in San Francisco, that it looks somewhat like the Palace Theater in Albany on the outside. So if you've been to any of those places, or again, go see the film Majestic with Jim Carrey. They created, in the middle of a street in Ferndale, California, a set design that looks like the outside of this theater, more or less. You know, it's from that same era. And if you've never, you know, if you've only been to chrome and glass and, you know, marble floor or terrazzo floor or whatever kinds of carpeted floor theaters in your lifetime, you need to treat yourself to the experience of coming into a theater that is truly iconic. So because the theater is coming of age and inching closer to being 100 years old soon, that's going to be some celebration that you must be starting to plan already. you know, buildings need maintenance. They need refurbishment. They need renovation. They need attention and care. They don't take care of themselves in general. And I know you've just come through a serious renovation, though.
Well, there was a renovation in 02 and 03, and then at the end of 2017, we actually bought the building back from the city of Albany.
Wow.
And that was to do exactly what you just said, to make sure we could sort of control the attention and the care and the maintenance that needed to be done on the building, and also to position us to be able to start getting grants and to start applying for funding to do a major restoration and renovation project. It was really not lost on me as I came into this role that it's not just about the last 90 plus years of the palace, but it's really about the next 100. And how do you make sure that this, you know, I'm just the temporary steward of this for right now, and one of many before me, and there'll be many after me. And if there's, you know, one thing that's really important is to make sure that this theater continues to thrive and that we have to move with the times. You know, it was interesting when David Byrne came here, he did a completely Bluetooth performance. Nothing was plugged in. So you had people with percussion around their neck, you know, holding it out in front of them. You had, everything was wireless. So you think about that. What is going to change in entertainment in the next 100 years?
That's a really interesting question. That, my dear Susan Roscoe Fogarty, is probably one of the most profound and insightful remarks I have listened to in the, well, we're about to approach our 17th birthday in July. It's one of the challenges, in my heart, I am an educator, and I have always been educating people. And for the last, I can't tell you how many years now, because I don't want to have you take off your shoes and start counting, especially since I'm only 19, and I'm going to be 19 again in another week. Now I educate people on how to travel and where to travel. But I have a master's degree in education and social science. And the most important thing anyone who is teaching anybody anything is not to teach them the answers to questions you know, but to teach them how to think through the answers to questions you don't even know what they're going to be. And to hear how, I have chills actually telling you this, because to hear how you are looking at how do we sustain this wonderful piece of history in Albany by trying to look ahead, to be in the right place, to deal with situations, circumstances, and questions that we don't even know what they're going to be. That, I mean, if you aren't the ultimate end user of the teaching of creative educators to get students to think out of the box and not look at, for every answer, a question, there's an answer. Because you really need to be looking at what could the questions possibly be and how can we be in place to roll in efficiently to being the answer for them. That's remarkable.
Well, and in not knowing where entertainment's going to go, the one thing I think we always have is what you touched on earlier is the live experience. But what that will look like and how it will be presented is going to change. Whether that's Bluetooth performances, holograms, you know, there will always be an element of a very traditional music, comedy, children's performance, but there are all kinds of things that are coming down the pike. So as we look into the future and we start this next phase of our restoration and renovation, one of the things we have to be very mindful of is technology upgrades so that we can handle all the bandwidth, because we do know that video and Bluetooth and all of those components are going to be more important moving forward. In addition to that, we're really preparing the theater to have a higher end customer experience. We're going to be expanding our lobby space. If you're in our house on a sold out show, which is many times, thankfully, there's a lot of energy in the room, but it can get a little crowded. And we've got a smaller, you know, again, we're an old historic theater, so the front lobby is a little tight. So we're going to be expanding our lobby. It's going to create much nicer flow, additional bar space. We're going to be finally adding an elevator. So right now, our patrons often have to be reseated if they have to go up to the mezzanine, so we'll be ADA compliant, which will be fantastic. Even things like, you know, just getting up to speed on, you know, bathrooms and gender-neutral bathrooms and, additional changing rooms, and really to address the needs of contemporary, you know, concert and theater goers.
I have to tell you, we are coming to the end of this hour and this interview, and this is one of those interviews that we will mark for a replay when we do our best of the year encore presentations. Because generally speaking, when I talk with people about theatrical venues of all kinds, I hear about a little bit about the history and a lot about the performances and how do you get the tickets and whatnot. But you are dealing with such amazing subject areas within what you're doing, in terms of just upgrading for the real and for the future that for us right now is quite unreal. Stay with me, everybody, over the top of the hour news. Thank you so much. ThinkPalaceAlbany.org, people. We're flying high.